Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello.
Hi.
Yeah, how do I enter that?
Should we cheers? I feel like you guys haven't started drinking and I'm halfway through this glass.
Oh, yeah.
Cheers.
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 Having me. Welcome.
Mm. Yes, so we're here with our third co-host for the week, not Shiva this time. Mm. It is Emma Louise Boynton. We actually don't do intros, really, because we're really
keep an air of mystery. let the girls figure it out as they go along.
Let the girls do a Google. No, yeah. We're just really bad at doing intros, I find.
I always think it's quite weird. I kind of veer between doing intros on live events and not, because I always think it's so weird when you're sat in front of someone, you're just like telling them all the things they've done in their life and you're so conscious of like, if I get one thing wrong, like, yes. I'm repeating your biography to you, and I always find it quite awkward. So yeah, I totally get that.
Well, so we're going to maybe, I mean, this is our first in-person interview in so long, so we're so glad you've actually like made the journey to my house.
AWD.
The AWD headquarters.
Anything to get off Zoom. Yeah. The joy of real life. My problem is like, I will not be able to shut up because I'm so excited to be sitting with real people.
We love that.
So
I agree. I love in-person interviews so much more. You actually become friends with the person, whereas on Zoom, it just feels so... I don't know, just a bit stale, but no one can be bothered anymore.
Lag as well.
Yeah.
Oh, and the time lag. You try to talk and then someone's like, and you're like,
And then the internet gets fuzzy and suddenly you're talking to like a purple blur and you have to pretend like, because I'm never sure it's my internet or theirs. So I have to carry on and be like, really interesting point. And they're just like this like mist blocky. And I'm like, do I say something now or do I wait? Yeah. Like, what do I do? So no, I think, and it's true. I'm a real follow-up, by the way. So we are going to be friends after this.
Totally.
Sliding into the DMs.
Well, yeah. I was an East London girl until very recently. So any excuse to get back that way.
Yes, great. I'd never leave. It's actually terrible. Yeah. Any excuse to make me leave. This is why actually today was great, because I often honestly don't leave like Islington, Shoreditch, Bethnal Green. And I feel like, yeah, good to see the rest of the world.
Yeah.
What else London has to offer?
Yeah, we'll take you around Goulburn Road. Excellent. Our favourite road.
Excellent.
I know. I wish we had time. It's good. We can set up a second
date.
Yeah.
That's date night number
the
two.
Which is like very looking useful at their clock.
Yeah, yeah. Like, what's your calendar like in the next few weeks?
Okay. So, yes, you're a woman of many talents. You have... I mean, I'm not going to list it all because you can list it, but you have Hustle, you've got the pod. Yeah. Can you tell us a bit about what you do?
Yes, of course. So my background is in journalism, similar to you two, although I didn't do, was in fashion. I was actually in news and current affairs in politics. So I used to work for Sky News, BBC as producer, and then worked for Tina Brown in New York, and then came back to London in like 2017 after a couple of years in New York, inspired by Women in the World, which is her, Tina Brown's live event business, which is all about telling, exploring kind of most kind of global pressing issues, but through the female lens. and was just loved how she, this kind of empire she'd built, and was so inspired by it. So came back to London and started setting up my own companies. And I say companies because I did firstly set up a political issues platform, which was a very noble endeavor with a terrible business plan. I don't know how we ever thought we'd make money. And just the, like, I would just very diligently write this like 4,000 word tome every week trying to disentangle US politics for our no readers. One of those things of like, build it and the audience will come, and they did not come. But nonetheless, it was so earnest. Yeah. I mean, that's also, I mean, like, earnestness like seeped off the fucking page. But then set up Her Hustle, which was initially a careers platform alongside that, because I just felt, whilst sitting writing these tomes and being like, what the hell is this going to be? I was like, where is a good careers advice at? Because I have no idea what I'm doing. And I don't know, having always been freelance, I was like, I need better advice. And so my best friend and I set up a careers platform called Her Hustle, which is a live events business where we'd interview amazing women across the board about what their job actually meant, like what their job title really entailed, like really getting behind the headline. And that ended up leaving the earnest business and focusing on Her Hustle. And that kind of like snowballed. So it became a bigger like live events business. Then the pandemic hit. And I was like on my high horse, like, I run a live events business. We just done our biggest event for International Women's Day at Soho House. I was like on this amazing high. I was hosting everything, loving it. And the pandemic hit. And I was like, right, back to the drawing board. So really had a kind of tumultuous pandemic of like doing lots of digital stuff. Ended up becoming a founding editor at The Stack World, which Charmaine Reed set up, which is amazing. Did lots of writing. And that's actually where I started writing my sex column about my experience getting sex therapy. And got kind of obsessed with the topic area. And the column was called Conversations with My Sex Therapist. And it just got me really fascinated in like reading and thinking about sex from obviously my personal experience doing sex therapy, but also from a kind of broader, more analytical perspective of all the issues around sex that so many people seem to experience. And that ended up being another kind of catalytic moment. And I kind of have now like transitioned Her Hustle into Sex Talks, which is the media platform I run. So doing the same thing, I run events, create podcasts, do lots of writing, but with a focus now on sex. So from politics to careers to sex, it's a love. Very obvious trajectory.
Exactly. You've landed in the perfect place. So can you tell us more about seeing a sex therapist?
Yes, I can. Because, my favorite topic.
Yeah, because I will obviously reading some of your columns, it's one of, and I loved how you were saying that whenever you tell someone you're seeing a sex therapist, people start being like, I haven't had an orgasm in 5 years. Or like start spilling everything to you because everyone secretly thinks that they're doing sex wrong.
Yes.
But doesn't, I don't think people even know sex therapy exists. I didn't know it existed.
No, neither did I until I suddenly become like the biggest like evangelist for sex therapy. I had no idea sex therapy was a thing. And like so many people who I've spoken to since writing the column, I thought I was broken. I couldn't orgasm in partnered sex since I broke up with my like long-term ex-boyfriend at university. So it was about 7 years of just like bad sex, not being able to orgasm. And I was at dinner party and I was talking to a group of quite new friends, actually. So we were really went in deep quickly and was just saying, yeah, I'm just not a sexual person. I'm not that, I don't really like sex. I'm not very good at it. And I don't orgasm. And one of them turned to me and was like, you know, you can fix this. You know, this is like a really common issue that people
so
face.
Many women feel like that.
Yes.
So many, like sexual dysfunction, which I think is actually quite a horrible way of saying it, but affects, I think it's like 53% of women at some point in their lives. Like it's a huge amount of people. And it's mainly, it's psychological rather than physiological. It's in your head. You build up this kind of anxiety around sex from after a couple bad experiences. That was in my case anyway. And then it becomes like a self-fulfilling prophecy. So sex becomes like quite bad because you're so nervous, like the bad thing's going to happen or it's not going to work, whatever. So I was chatting to this new friend and she was like, she'd seen a sex therapist. And she was like, this sex therapist changed my life. And then another girl at the table, I kid you not, two of them had seen the same sex therapist, this Australian sex therapist.
Australia.
Doing us proud.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, doing very proud. And they put me in, she was like, you just try it out. Why not? And I was like, fuck it. What do I have to lose? Like sex can't get any worse. So got in touch. And then Charmadine being like the amazing mind that she is, set up Stack. So she said, you know, you should document this and you should write this as a column. And I think had she not said that, had she not commissioned it as a column and given me a kind of work impetus to continue with sex therapy, I think I probably would have quit quite quickly because I'm a like instant gratification kind of gal. Like I want to like go to one therapy session and be fixed and cured and orgasm.
Same.
Not what happens. But yeah, so I got into sex through this person, and then it was amazing. It's like you go back through your sexual history of like really like unpicking all the essentially like sexual traumas that have really formed how you see and experience sex and your body, going back to my eating disorder, which affected how I had sex. And you just like talk through it. And it's incredibly cathartic, as I know therapy is. But I think it also gives you space to verbalize things like sexual trauma that perhaps you just kind of have previously buried. And so I was assaulted when I was 17, but never really saw it as assault. I was like, oh, it's just, you know, a thing that happened. You know, I was asleep and, you know, someone, I was told the next morning that someone had sex with me. Like, that's quite a big thing. And I just had never processed it because I didn't, you know, you just kind of, it's also really common, like so many friends have had that. But so it just kind of gave me the opportunity to like work through things I think had over the years built up this quite like difficult relationship with sex. Have I pitched sex therapy to you?
You certainly have. We need to expense it on the after work drinks account.
Yes.
And record our sessions like Esther Perot and share them.
Yes. In one of your columns, you talk about how people's relationship to sex is so often what you found like through your sex therapy is so often to do with their relationship to their own bodies, and how you can think it's a problem. It's a sex problem, but really it's a you problem with your previous experiences that you've had or the way you view your body in itself, completely separate to sex as well.
Totally. And I think that's actually like my biggest takeaway from sex therapy is that like so much of how you see sex and relate to sex is, yeah, as you say, kind of formed outside of the context of the bedroom. And in the same way that oftentimes any issues around sex, like the sex therapist will often say, if I interview them on panels, if you have an issue with sex with your partner, talk about it outside of the bedroom. Don't like figure out during sex. But I think, yeah, going back to your point there about like your relationship to your body, I wrote about this quite a bit in the column, but I grew up with really bad anorexia and then bulimia. I used to take loads of laxatives and I would drink too much. I just like punished my body. I hated my body so much. And even now I think I'm so obsessively active of like, I go to the gym all the time. I've just been telling you both before we came on air about my new obsession with mountaineering. I think it's a bit far-fetched me calling me mountaineering, by the way. I literally climbed a mountain.
Grace's boyfriend's like sliding into your DMs as we speak.
I love it. He's really with like
full game. I
literally had like trainers in a backpack and I was just like climbing up a mountain by a beach.
My career now.
Exactly. I quit everything and just do that. But I mean, I think part of that like obsession, like I need to be moving all the time, is I still do find it quite difficult to just be in my body because I'm used to thinking it is too fat. And I know I'm not a fat person. And it's just, I have really bad body dysmorphia and just grew up with that voice in my head being like, you're too big, you're taking up too much space, just that discomfort in my skin. So now, like, I'm really like, sex therapy was so helpful in getting over that. But I think it made me realize how intensely uncomfortable I had become and I was in my body. And again, I didn't think that that was something that would be affecting sex at all, but it was one of the first things my sex therapist and I really delved into. And actually, interestingly, she works on an eating disorder ward. So alongside doing her sex therapy, she works on this ward, and she was like, the interconnection between, particularly for women, between eating disorders and sexual issues is huge. And, you know, it was a point that she made and I've learned to, you know, really take it on board. How can you be present in sex, which is so intimate, it's so much about your body and accepting bodily pleasure and exploring bodily pleasure, your own and someone else's, if you hate your body and if you can't sit in it and if you're always looking for escape routes? So my escape routes were previously like not eating, throwing up, you know, just waging this war on my body. And I think, you know, as I just said, I still find it difficult to be like still because I'm like, no, I need to be moving the body. But what sex therapy allowed me to do was kind of just be a little bit like quieter in my body and just like not feel so much hate. And I think it was, I genuinely felt, and this sounds really cliche and cringy, but it's true, I felt like I was like putting down weapons. I felt like I'd been at this war with my body for so long. And in talking to this therapist and really like going through, like, yeah, just getting to the like root of that, I felt like I just put down my weaponry and was like, okay, I'm not gonna suddenly like adore my body, but I'm not gonna hate it so much. And I think that's been so critical in allowing me to be more present, not just in partner sex, which definitely has been the case, but particularly with masturbating. Mm. Like when I'm masturbating now, I feel so much more like in my body, and I can tell if I'm having quite a like disconnected, kind of frazzled week, because I don't like the, generally like the orgasm feels very different. And I think, again, that was just something like self-pleasure just wasn't something I prioritized because I just didn't respect or like my body. So why spend time giving it pleasure? That was a gratuitous thing that I didn't deserve. And I think, final point on this long monologue, but I think this idea of deserving pleasure is a really interesting one. And I think it comes up a lot with the event series around sex talks. I think of women particularly, because kind of that's like the general audience of my events, kind of expressing in different ways how they feel that they need to like earn the pleasure. So whether that's like in the context of like you have to like give someone else all the pleasure first, and then you can kind of, then it's okay for you to receive it. Or like, I don't know, it's just, I think it's just quite a, perhaps like quite a female trait that we feel like we need to be deserving of something nice, when actually like our bodies are just like amazing vessels for great pleasure. And like the clitoris, I'll forget the stat, but it has like double the amount of number of nerves that the penis does. It's like made, it's the only part of the human body made purely for pleasure. That is something worth celebrating.
Yeah, we're so lucky.
And I loved reading how you said that your sex therapist had told you to keep a pleasure diary about things that had nothing to do with sex to get in touch with pleasure outside of sex, if that makes sense. Can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah, the pleasure journal was one of the first pieces of homework, I say in inverted commas, and I was so bad at keeping up the homework, that my sex therapist sent me. And the purpose of it was to help me to step back into my body that, as I said, I'd been like running away from and battling for so many years. And the idea was to write down 5 things a day that felt, that gave me pleasure. So that's like my coffee in the morning, water running down my back when I had a shower. And the idea was to kind of allow myself to feel and notice these points of pleasure. And as I said, having always had this like very kind of battle-ridden kind of relationship with my body, where I was constantly trying to like hurt it and not feel like nice things, it was a really, really important practice that just got me into the habit of allowing myself to feel the pleasure and noticing it. And it's kind of a lot bit like kind of mindfulness, really, of just being a bit more, kind of still and present for those moments of pleasure. And it sounds like such a small task, but honestly, I'd actually recommend everyone do it and like just help you feel a little bit more present in your body, and then see how it makes you feel when you masturbate later that day.
Homework.
Exactly. Yes. So homework, pleasure diary for a week, and then masturbate.
Yeah.
See if you notice the difference.
I've been doing like sessions with a naturopath about bloating, and she's making me keep like a gut health diary, and I'm like, this sounds so much more fun.
Add in a pleasure diary too.
Add a pleasure diary, because otherwise I have to be like, I ate oats and then I was bloated at 4 p.m.
But actually, you know what? Even with that, it's like, what are the foods that make you feel good? The pleasure points. And then it's like focusing on those. So.
Exactly.
This, we hadn't written down, but I think that what we were talking about before, like, I think so many women would feel similar. We talked about it with Liz Goldwyn a bit, but I just think that a lot of the time women, like, I read that a guy asked you what you wanted during sex and you froze. And I feel like even though I feel as though I'm not shy, I wouldn't really know what to say if someone asked me that much.
It's not like that you know what it is and you're shy to ask. It's like you literally have never even thought about it, so you have nothing to say.
Yeah, and then women, obviously, out in the outside world, we are taught to kind of be quieter and taught to not be as demanding or whatever. And I'm just wondering if you're a sex therapist, or you're our sex therapist. Had tips for people to kind of to figure that out, or like to know how to.
Great question. Yeah. I love this. So yes, oh my gosh, I'll never forget that moment. What do you like, me? Isn't it different with everybody? Like, I had no idea. And yeah, I think that it just speaks to such like disembodiment, does it? I'm not spending the time to actually get to know your body. And I think that really stems from, I think that we have quite a like heteronormative, very male-centric cultural script around what sex should look like that puts a lot of primacy on male pleasure, idea that like sex ends when a man comes. So there's a lot of focus on male pleasure that I think growing up, when I think of all the films I've seen and how they depict sex, it's often again like two people fucking until a man comes, and very seldom is the clitoris like, you know, the star of the show in any way, shape or form.
Or even shown
exactly. There's a company or a platform started called the Clit Test, which is seeking to highlight the need to have more of an emphasis on the on clitoral pleasure and stimulation in sex scenes, which I'm like all for. The reason I talk about, I bring that up is that I think for me personally, I think that seems, from what I gather from speaking to lots of people, seems to be quite a typical thing, is that growing up, I did think of sex as for men. And not a kind of, I won't think I would have verbalized it as such, but the way I went into sex, it was very much for a man's pleasure. Again, thinking about like what I'd seen in porn, what I'd seen in films, how I'd read about sex, the primacy of male pleasure was kind of embedded in my mind.
And it's kind of like, I was doing it, I don't know about you, but I was doing it as a way to feel validated for myself, exactly. But nothing to do with like my pleasure or sex. It was like them liking me enough to have sex.
Exactly.
With me.
And thinking you're like, I remember always being like, I want to be the cool girl that's always up for having sex. Like that never says I'm too tired or I'm too whatever.
I don't like that. Like I remember I had sex when like, I remember this one guy when I was like 17, fingering me with, it felt like scissor hand, man.
Yeah.
Honestly, yes. It was like the most painful.
All been there.
Honestly, it was the worst moment. And not saying anything. So I was like, and I remember like, just endure it. Because you just need to get, like the number of times growing up, I felt just get through this. And again, so I think that's because, this emphasis on male pleasure as being kind of the, that's what's important in sex. As a result of growing up with these narratives, I think I never really put that much store by my own pleasure. I mean, as I mentioned before, the eating disorder, that had a huge bearing on it. But when it came to sex, I didn't really ever think about my pleasure being important or something to explore. If you don't spend the time getting to know what you like sexually, and that I really think is through self-pleasure and through with partners, when you'd be like, hey, can we try this? Can we try that?
Or maybe porn, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, you can see, I think it's about, I guess it's like having the seeking to explore. So just like if you're trying to find a new food group that you like, or food, like, you know, dish that you want to cook, you need to try them. So you go to different restaurants, you cook different foods, you try different dishes. The same is kind of with sex. If you want to explore what feels good and what doesn't, you just have to do it, whether that's on your own or with somebody else. And I think that, so in terms of thinking about kind of how my sex therapist kind of helped kind of coach me through this, and I think it's definitely a work in progress, because I still will find myself having sex and being like, in my head, like, this doesn't feel great, I'm not gonna come, and then I don't say anything. I'm like, you literally write about this, you tell other people to communicate. Yeah. But, well, as a first port of call, I think it's a couple of things. So first of all, as I say, it's exploration. So through masturbating, through, as you say, like watching porn that you find, like seeing what turns you on and what doesn't turn you on. And then if you're in like with a partner, or if you have someone that you feel comfortable with, like being really vocal in the context of sex, being like, can we try this? And then being comfortable enough to say, like, actually, you know what? This doesn't feel that good. Can we try this? Can we try that? Can we just kind of like play around a little bit? And I love that, because I think sex is meant to be playful. And Esther Perel talks about this a lot. Like, sex is supposed to be fun and playful and joyful. And actually, when you make it playful and when you make it fun, it kind of, I think she says, like, that allows you kind of this, that's when kind of a real eroticism occurs, because it kind of allows you to feel like safe in that context. You have your boundaries set, but you get to be super exploratory. I think I'm totally misquoting her there, but like, it's an amalgamation of a couple of ideas she's talking about. So I think having that, really like setting out to explore what feels good. And I think what I've definitely found doing sex therapy is that the more you talk about sex and what you think you like, how you feel about sex, the more comfortable you become in that kind of exploration, as I've just described. Because I mean, Kate Moyle, this brilliant sex therapist, talks about this often, that it's almost like a muscle memory that you need to exercise. So you need to really like to get in the habit of talking quite openly and quite honestly about sex. It's again, it's like a muscle, you need to exercise it. So having sex therapy, you have, whether it's weekly or monthly or however often you do it, you have a very set time and space in which you are flexing that muscle, and you're getting into the practice of talking openly about things that previously, well, in my case, made me really blush, that made me feel quite uncomfortable. And I think taking that outside of the therapy room and into the context of those, what I felt were conversations with sexual partners, of being like, actually, can you touch my clit in that way? That still makes me blush even like saying it here. But I do think that is so critical in like really finding out what you like. And a final note on that, I do think I proselytize, as I say, about the benefits of communication and self-exploration. And honestly, I'm still so shit at both those things. But I do think seeing them as important at least allows you to put to like try a bit more.
So on that topic, we wanted to talk about sexting, which includes, if you would like to repeat a saucy little tale, but you wrote about how in the pandemic, sexting almost became a way for you to like learn how to communicate those desires from this, like it's a good tool for women, especially because you have the safety of a barrier to actually think, well, what do I want next? What do I want to say? And you can do it.
I've never sexted.
Have you not?
I'm such a fucking baby. I can't think. I couldn't think of what to say. I don't feel. I think also I'm not like the sexy. Always in relationships, they're never like. It's never like the sexy thing. It's always more of a jokey. It becomes quite jokey and like friendly and taking the piss out of each other.
Yeah.
So me then being like, I want your big cock.
You need an alter ego. You need alter egos for each other.
Yeah.
That'll be good.
But you know, I've random guys. I've never sexted anyone.
I hadn't prior to the pandemic and then needs must at a certain time. But I do think, I similar to you actually, I can't imagine the previous I've had one like long term relationship. I think I would have found it really difficult to switch on that like sexual, like, hey, you know, I want you to finger me in this way and fuck me in that way. Like, because you are like, you do have to like step into this other persona. Whereas
when you're like, what's for dinner?
Yeah, like, exactly.
You're so, a separate chat. What time do you mind getting some toilet paper on your way back? Actually, we're out. Like that, it's difficult to like, I guess, shift, like gear shift in such a way. The benefit, I suppose, one of them, of being single, which I am now, is that the kind of, I've had a couple people, two or three, who I have had like quite just sexual relationships with, which was quite new for me. I think I always had like, you know, I wanted something so much more. And I thought one particular person recently who I was just, it was a primarily sexual relationship. And so I got to pretend and perform in a way that was quite fun. In the end, didn't end up so well, but in the moment, like, I did feel like I was acting out this character, and I like started saying all this stuff, and it was like really hot and sexy and spicy, and I was like, who is this? And again, it's like practicing. I mean, it's what I was saying before, it's like muscle memory. You have to like practice it, because it does feel really awkward at first, and I was a bit like, oh, I just feel so lame. But then once you get into it, you can't stop. That's the thing. You're like, fuck me like this, and my fingers here. And you're like, but the story I was saying before, so it was the pandemic, was the first time that I'd ever sexted.
Yes.
And I think I was getting used to, I was getting into the habit through sex therapy of talking more openly about sex. And I think also if you mention to someone that you're in sex therapy, and obviously I'm like the biggest oversharer, so anything I'm doing, you know about it. I mentioned I was in sex therapy to this guy I'd met on a dating app, and we, you know, threw it into light combo. We'd only ever texted because I was in New York, he was in another city in the UK, and so we hadn't had a chance to meet yet. We were talking for like a month, as you know, pandemic. Anyone who's single in pandemic, I feel like, I hope you relate to this. I hope I wasn't the only one. Had these like weird, intense texting relationships with people. They kind of became your boyfriend, but you'd never actually met. Anyway, so we were texting and he was like really like supposedly like very erotic and sensual. And he was like, for me, communication is key during sex. It's really important to talk through sex, to really communicate. And I was like, God, this guy is singing my new like sex therapized language. And he'd also written an erotic novel in lockdown.
Oh my god!
Detail. So he
is the first telling.
Yeah, the first. I had to save something special.
Oh my god!
He sent me a chapter. It was
a chapter. Stop. Was it about you?
Terrible. By you? No, sadly not.
Did you think it was good at the time?
Because I was shocked. I was like, that it was like, it was very explicit.
Women are so forgiving, honestly. Like,
oh my god,
a man would like dump a girl for having like,
oh,
a
god,
long finger.
You're so dumb, like a toe. Like the middle toe. You don't shout out the middle toe. Fuck out. He sent me this fucking thing. I was very accepting. I was like, yeah, I think I'm too accepting. But he was, you know, I said to you earlier, like, you get me with poetry and prose. If you're, this is why I end up with like texting so many writers who would send me poems, and they'd send me like long essays they've written, and I write texts like essays. So like I either don't text back for like 3 months or I send you like an essay. So anyway, so we were chatting, and he was, you know, sent me this erotic novel, which was really explicit. Like, he'll never listen to this. Like, it was so badly written. I wanted to edit it.
He'll never listen to this.
Imagine if he does.
He's our wine male listener.
A bottle of wine and get the transcript out and read some segments.
Oh my God, my dad wrote a porno take two.
I'm hoping. I mean, he said he had like really nice female audience. Let's hope that he's not listening.
We have no straight men that listen to this.
Excellent. So I can go on. It was so badly written. I was shocked because he's also a writer for TV. So I was like, you should be a good writer. It wasn't. I wanted to edit it. But it was like very graphic scenes of like his throbbing dick and her mouth, and he thrusts her head.
Yeah, of course he did. Of course he fucking did.
It was all about basically a man getting a blowjob in a car. Honestly, like literally like basic fantasy. And then going like digging a hole in someone's family home and there being like a dog's funeral. It was bonkers.
Men are so random, honestly. Like, what's going through their brains?
Honestly. Aww. And nonetheless, I was a fucking sucker for it. Of course. And we ended up going on a date, which was fine. It was actually a fun date. And then, you know, something cropped up from his past and he couldn't talk to me anymore. And I was like, okay.
Oh, God.
So by this point, sorry, I left out the key bit of information. We had been sexting a bit and it was like really erotic. And I'd like lie on my bed and obviously hadn't had sex for ages of pandemic. And we like, yeah, he'd say what he was going to do to me. And I was honestly like, blushing, but also with my housemate, who's like my best friend. I'd be like, I'm going to say this. I'm going to say, oh my God, he said this. Okay, I'm going to say, yeah, you'll finger me like this and you'll do this. And we were both kind of laughing and doing it together, but it was really fun. And I was honestly so turned on. I was like, how can I be this wet from a text? Mm. But oh my God.
Me at age 12 reading Dawson's Creek.
Literally on my grandma's couch. I was like, what's happening to my underwear? I remember my version of that was I was at a friend's house and her like older brother was watching a movie, and I've always tried to find this movie, and a girl was a vampire and then she just dropped her dress and her tits dropped out, and I thought about it. I was like 8 and I thought about it for like 5 years.
Oh my God.
It's like the horniest thing I've ever seen.
I'm sure you could find like vampire porn.
Apparently, yeah. You can find it. Trust me.
Vampire porn.
Like, where's your boat?
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was my first foray into sexting. And I was like, God, this is amazing. Like, this new experience. Like, you know, it's the universe bringing us together. Anyway, then eventually his whatever had cropped up from his past disappeared back into that past. And he came and met me one night at the pub, and I was with some friends, mutual friends. Long story short, after quite a long night where he was very awkward and weird and just honestly, too tolerant, as you said earlier, women too tolerant. He ended up staying over and we slept together, and like really early in the morning, like not great. And I never would like, I think it's really not okay to be like, that person's bad in bed, that, because I don't think it's like that. I think sex is, you know, it's a mutual thing. You're together.
And also like
one night stands, yeah. Exactly.
Terrible.
However, if you say you're someone that likes to communicate during sex, yes, if you uttering not a novels, single yeah. word, not
maybe
a single
he meant
word.
Sign language.
Maybe he meant I'm actually speaking in my head and you have to read my eyes, because the guy didn't say a fucking thing. And there was no emphasis on my, but he said he was super into giving people pleasure. He did not give me any pleasure. And it was so funny.
Someone talks like that for months and then it's just
honestly,
brisk,
and it was quiet, so brisk. It was like that, and like not a word was uttered. It was so like primacy on male pleasure the whole way. Like, obviously I did not come, and it was just like not good. And then we slept like on opposite sides of the bed. I felt like a magnet repelling, we were magnets repelling one another.
Oh God.
And next morning he left at like 9 a.m. we'd gone to bed at, like 6, so he literally left in the greatest hurry I've ever seen someone leave my house. He ran.
He scurried out.
Like, oh God, I've got to go wedding shopping for his friend's wedding. I don't know.
At this point, I was like,
please, and take your bad energy with you. I need to sage the house. Anyway, he leaves. Less than 12 hours later, my best friend housemate, who had been up, so we'd still sit up late, him, his friend, me, my friend. And we, by the way, have been best friends since we were 13. And at one point in the night, he'd been like, you two are so cute. You're like such, like, you're literally like sisters. We are so tight. He was like, it's such a like beautiful relationship. Yeah, it is. Less than 12 hours later, he slid into her DMs. So
funny.
Basically propositioning her, being like, hey, like, what are you up to tonight? Like, where are you? Was it me or did we both really fancy each other last night?
How insane.
I mean,
how insane.
Totally insane. And so deluded. And poor, but I felt my Elspeth, she came home and she was like, yeah. And she was so upset. She had like tears in her eyes. She was like, I don't know how to tell you this. Like, he'd added her on Instagram at like 9 a.m. So he'd left the door.
What?
Added her on Instagram as he left. So this is, and he also, he was like, he tried to excuse it, being like, oh, I was paralytic drunk. I don't remember. I'm like, babes, you obviously had a plan. He left the house, added her on Instagram.
This is like a crime.
Isn't this? I
on 9 a.m. she leaves the house at 9:03.
Adds her on Instagram.
You guys go to the police.
Exactly. We're like, we had all the evidence. We know what went down
this
day.
Have you seen this man?
Have you seen this? They actually need to be outed on like soft boys. Yeah. What's that?
Soft boy.
Yeah.
Oh my God, he is the
ultimate,
the king soft
boy. The thing is, the trail is just quite long. It doesn't get summarized in one sweet text, as I would have loved, because beam me up soft boy would have taken that easily. I mean, after that, I, you know, obviously we severed it. I sent the best text of my life, I think, just being like, you must not seep your darkness into other people's lives. But yeah, totally and utterly deleted.
No, but your text was, you were like, we're just sitting at the kitchen table.
My first one was like, by the way, we're sitting at the kitchen table laughing at your delusion. And then I was like just basically big capital, like, lol. Like, yes. You're crazy. But then the next day I was like, right, I've seen red. I need to send a cathartic essay.
There's more to be said.
Especially after, like, also when someone has fucking, like, when you have sex with someone, it's just like, that's, you do just feel, you're just like, If that hadn't happened, you would have felt like way less angry. But it's that feeling of like actually just being like naked with someone else.
Yeah.
I mean, even if you don't like them and even if it's a one night stand, it's still just like fuck.
It's just
fuck
such
you. Like
basic manners. I'm like, if you, like, we weren't dating, like, do what, like, you know, if in 6 months' time you'd, you know, if you really like totally in love with her and wanted to be with her, I mean, the idea that she wanted to, like, she was like, she described him, I think the next morning I was on a walk. And I was like, so what did you think? Because I think by this point, obviously didn't know, like, was a bit grossed out, but was still in my, like, you know, happy delusion. And she was like, what did she say? She was like, he has like the personality of a sloth. He literally like doesn't add like nothing. She was so cut. She's brutal when she wants to be. Mm. So I think the idea that he really thought that was going to happen is just, yeah.
Oh my
so that
God.
Was my, so I say that nonetheless. And actually with the next person I've been sexting recently, it's also not panned out that well, so maybe the moral of this story is don't sext if you're single, but it's really fucking fun, and it does both, I do think, in a, you know, me post-pandemic spiritual woo-woo vibes, I do think everyone comes into your life for a reason, people cross paths for a reason, and I do think that both the, like, these sexting people I've sexed with have been very helpful to me personally in helping me, as we say, like, get used to talking in a sexual way without feeling super embarrassed. And I think that's also been really helpful in terms of verbalizing like what I like and getting used to the sound of it. Because I think what I always found mortifying and still do is then like in sex, you're like, touch my clit. I'm like, oh, I'm so posh and white and lame. I'm like, gross. I'm like, oh, please touch my clitoris. Or,
you
know, also, I'm like, I quite like a quick rough sex. So I remember once sleeping with someone and being like, bite me. And he was like, excuse me? And I was like, bite me. I'm sorry, I'm trying to be more communicative during sex.
Please bite me on the vagina.
And we both just like burst out laughing. I think it's actually the thing that kind of like broke the seal, because at that point he just burst out laughing. He was like, sorry, like a tiger, like, what do you mean? And I was like, I'm sorry, I just like being bitten actually on the shoulder. It was so weird.
That's awesome.
But actually it kind of opened up quite a like funny, nice, like chatty, conversational nature to sex, and ended up being great. So
I loved it. Was it in Sex, Love and Goop?
Oh my God.
AKA my favorite documentary. Did you watch that?
Yeah, I loved it.
The one where
AKA my favorite documentary.
By the amazing documentarian. I don't know if you've heard of her. She's kind of akin to like the David Attenborough of sex.
Exactly. It literally was, there's that one where there's that woman who's helping them all energetically. Yeah. Do you remember? She's like helping them get pushed out of and touching them. And then it's her and her husband. And they both, it's like, it's like kind of confronting, but they both like come on camera in clothes away from each other, just energetically, but they're just, the way they're communicating, they've got this like shorthand about where to move, where to think, can you do that? Can you touch that? Can you? And watching it was just so incredible to me because you're like, these are people that have perfected this over 10, 15 yeah. years, and they're almost like telepathically speaking, but they have this way they can communicate to say exactly what they want in the moment, and it's just so cool.
That's like a very evolved iteration of my bite me.
Yeah, exactly. That's step one.
Yeah, exactly. Give me another decade, and I might be able to like telepathically transmit to a sexual partner.
Exactly.
I'd like to please be bitten on my shoulder as you fuck me.
I love it. It's great.
Yeah. Amazing. I've been figuring out that we like stuff like that too recently, where I've just been like, oh, okay, you like stuff you knew. But also with things like having, I don't know how much I want to admit on the podcast, but having like things.
Our mother-in-laws.
Like, oh, no, I was meaning about like sexual assault. Because I was with that, like with things like that having happened to you in the past, you think you like won't be into, like, it's just, it's a weird thing to like, figure out in your brain. So or just like, even just like strangling, a light strangle or like.
Light strangle is great.
I know, but I'm like, I still feel like it's kind of weird to like that.
So actually this comes up often at sex talks, and one previous speaker, Nadine Noor Ahmed, who is the co-founder of Pussy Palace.
One of my boyfriend's best friends.
Really? Mm. Oh my gosh.
The bath salts in the bathrooms from them. So it's like Tuama love Nads.
No way. Yeah. Honestly, really cute. They are such an incredible human and very valued previous sex talk speaker. But they were talking about how, oh my gosh. Oh my God.
Before I met them, I was like looking at, when me and my boyfriend first started dating, I was like doing Instagram stalks.
Yeah.
And like came across Nadine's profile and I was like, no. I was like, you can't be friends with people like this. Like, it was like thotty butt shots and like latex. And I was like, I'm going to die.
They are so gorgeous. But they were talking about how powerful kink has been for helping them overcome sexual trauma. And it sounds kind of juxtaposition, like it wouldn't make sense if you've had, as you say before, like if you've had an experience that has been violent or hasn't been consensual. Actually, Nadine was making the point that in the context of kink, they were able to explore their sexual fantasies, that genuinely things that they did like, but in a consensual environment. So it's almost like taking the power back and saying, I do want to be strangled, but I have boundaries and I am in charge here. So they were like very much setting what they wanted. And I think that's a really important thing. Cause I think, as you say, it can be quite, you don't want to like cut yourself off from being able to explore different sexual things because of something bad having happened, and think that everything you want thereafter is a result of that one bad experience. But it's almost like creating environments that allow you to explore those things safely in a way that allows you to kind of feel emotionally safe in that moment.
Yeah, that's so true. Because I don't know. It's like, I don't know if it's just this old school. It's a feeling I have towards Botox. Like, I'm like,
is this somehow inherently misogynist? Even though I want it and they don't. Yes, they don't want to do it. I'm making them do it.
Like, it's younger and gorgeous. Yeah. And then with the like strangling and being really submissive thing, I'm just like,
oh my gosh. I think about this all the time, but I love being sexually dominated and being strangled and fucked and like everything.
Yeah,
and in real life, in day-to-day life, like I think I'm like quite obnoxiously domineering character and like have a loud voice and take a lot of space. Like, I quite like that role reversal within the context of sex. I just enjoy that. I kind of, if someone does something I don't like, I'm very quick to be like, don't like that move. No. Post-sex therapy, like don't go through anything I don't like. But I think it's nice. It's that role reversal is like quite exciting. It feels quite empowering. And I think as long as it's in the context in which you do feel like it's a choice. And I think that's a big difference for me, is that I think before, with my relationship to sex being when it was quite problematic, when I was submissive, I was genuinely just being submissive because I just felt that sex was on someone else's terms. And I don't think it felt like empowering. It just like, it was that. And it wasn't always bad, but it just, sex was something that was dictated by whoever I was sleeping with. Whereas now I feel like it's a choice. Like, I want that. I want you to pin me down and strangle me and butt me from behind. Like, I don't like that.
Yeah. Also, I think when you are a domineering personality, like myself, it can be kind of easy to dominate in your relationships as well. And I found in the past that my exes would end up just kind of for their sanity, like just letting me get my way a lot. And I would be the one that would make most of the decisions. And I, because I'm bossy and because I'm grumpy and whatever, I would just be the dominant personality. And then, yeah, so as you say, it's like really nice when then in the bedroom, like basically because then that would feed over into the bedroom kind of thing.
Yeah.
Where they were just kind of a bit quieter or whatever.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, more recently it's been like an opposite thing where I've just been realizing that like, oh, I want a completely different thing.
Yeah.
But because I'm so bossy, it's like hard to for other people to even stand up to that. Or something.
Yeah, you're like, no, don't tie me up to me like that. Do it this way.
Yeah. Sorry, you've done a knot wrong. Can you undo that, please, and try
that
again?
Hard? Yeah, no, it's so interesting.
Yeah.
Oh my God, what was I about to say? Have you seen that new movie that's come out called, whatever it's called,
Leo Grand? Yes. I have not. I am so excited to see it. I've just been away for my birthday, so I haven't had a chance to watch it yet, but I am... listened to Emma Thompson's amazing interview with Emma Barnett on Women's Hour. Mm. And I love how she talked about the... Oh, I just loved how she... I mean, it was a brilliant interview, so everyone should listen to it. But I loved how she talked about the exploring the breadth of female pleasure at an older age, obviously, which she does through the character. And if anyone that doesn't know the plot, it's obviously, it's a, I think it's a woman in her 60s or so, or yeah, later, perhaps, who has had a divorce or breakup and then gets a sex worker.
She'd like never had an orgasm.
Never had an orgasm, so it's good. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then ends up getting the sex worker to be exploratory. I mean, talk about practicing what you like and what you want. Great way of doing it. So practice it with this sex worker. But that, how amazing that that film has been made. I'm desperately trying to get an interview with everyone on that film. So if anyone knows.
Love Emma Thompson.
She's so fabulous. And I love the way she talks about body hair. So on this interview, she was like, it's so crazy to me. She's like, I don't shave my armpits, but I do shave my legs. And I don't understand why. And, you know, you just said before, it's like that internalized misogyny almost. And it's really hard to navigate internalized misogyny because we don't grow up in a political vacuum. We all grow up being influenced by our environment, by our culture. Like, you know, I think it is ridiculous that women are kind of socially conditioned to shave all their body hair. Yet, here I am. Same. With shave. Well, actually, no, my legs are so hairy right now.
So but I just like my legs. Recently they got like, so I feel like it had been like a month. And I
weirdly like am the opposite where I still shave under my armpits, which so many women don't. Like a lot of my friends here don't at all.
Yeah.
And, but my legs, I don't care when they're hairy. I'm like the opposite. I like quite like it when my legs are hairy.
Really? Yeah. My legs are so, I'm like, honestly, but I grow knives rather than hairs.
But I guess I am like not that hairy, I think. Anyway.
But I also feel the same way. Whenever I get a wax and I'm like lying, I mean, I love my waxist. Her name is Lee and she's bonkers and she's fabulous. But when I'm lying like legs akimbo and I'm like, I don't have a very high pain threshold, I think, because I scream it's that horrible salon down. I'm like,
there is nothing worse. I remember once getting a Brazilian after a stretch of shaving in between.
Oh.
And as it was happening, I was like, I think this is the most pain I've ever been
ever
in.
Been in.
And I was like, why the fuck do I do this? This is so, so, crazy. So insane that all, the collective pain of every woman in history is Brazilian wax could like open a fucking fifth dimension.
It's so, so
it would
true
open the upside down.
By also that,
oh, no, it pops out.
It looks kind of awful after. I always say to my Elspeth, I'm like, I look like I'm like mauled pig after.
Yes.
It's like you get ingrown hairs, I get spots. I'm like, I look like I'm diseased. And yeah, this
I
is just
like I'd been like attacked or something. I like walked into Nando's to see Zach and he was like, what's wrong? I was like, I don't want to talk about it.
Oh my God.
Something just happened to me.
Yeah.
And then I was angry at him and he was like, you don't have to wax your vagina, I don't care. And I was like, I don't know why.
Yeah,
it just makes you feel nicer.
Yeah.
Which is the fucked
up
thing.
But also, it makes you feel like you're not looking after when you leave, like nails, hair removal thing. This is the fucked up thing about society. It makes you feel like you've been lazy or undisciplined
Something. You just feel you feel a bit disheveled. Yeah, like if you haven't washed your hair or something.
But also, like, I look at my, when I'm naked, if I look at myself, like, I don't feel sexy if I'm not waxed, which is terrible because that is purely coming from porn. And I don't even watch that much porn, so I don't know how that seeped into my watch is so assiduously. But that's like, it's not that you know, body hair, like getting rid of pubic hair only happened in what, like the 80s?
Yeah.
Like it's quite, you know, new phenomenon. It's crazy, but here I am actually with a really hairy vagina, so I'm like, I actually need to book a wax.
I had laser years ago and
I have one booked in. Yeah.
It was really painful. I got it for free through work.
Yeah.
It was so fucking painful. Really? But for like 5 years, I didn't have to think about my vagina. And now it's kind of coming back a bit, but I still don't really have to do much.
Books and laser.
It's really painful.
Really?
Yeah.
Also, like, I do find it bizarre, the idea that we like zap. Now it's not even waxing, we're zapping off. Yeah. We're like, what even is that? What is the laser?
Being a woman is fucked. Anyway, so this movie, I saw it last week. It's amazing. You guys will both love it. But I was thinking about it when I was reading about, I can't remember the phrase used,
situational analgasmic.
Yes, because that movie is about a woman who is 60 and has had sex her whole life and has never orgasmed. And even when she has sex with the sex, she basically says, it's not going to happen. I just want to try like different things. Yeah. And that's kind of like the arc of the movie. And I think so many women have not orgasmed and are terrified to admit it or too ashamed to admit it. Fake orgasms, obviously, all the time, barely have them and have just told themselves it's normal. And you kind of had that experience, right?
Yeah. And I think it's so interesting because now, you know, mentioned I run this event series, Sex Talks, and one of the most like common things come up is people not being able to orgasm and women saying, I think I'm broken. I said this before, like, I think I'm broken. And that was the first thing I said to my sex therapist. I was like, listen, I'm broken. So I can't be fixed. So good luck trying. And it's so sad that is like that we internalize, you know, it's such a range of things can feed into your relationship sex, we've discussed in this conversation, but that people feel that they're broken as a result of that, when it actually just is quite easy to fix. And for me, it was just, I think, as I think I mentioned before, like your ability to orgasm is really, really psychological. And if you're not able to be in the moment and to be like, feel connected to your body, it is really like hard to orgasm. And I genuinely felt like I had this like blocker. Like I just knew I wasn't going to come. And I also, it was a combination. I kind of knew I wasn't going to come. So then I felt like I wasn't going to come. So then I didn't come because I was so like in my head. And then I also, again, hadn't really explored my own like pleasure and my kind of sexual self. So I didn't really know what to do to tell people to how to make me come. And actually the last Sex Talks, or no, one before last, I interviewed Florence Bach, who runs Come Curious, which is a great platform. And she had a line which is stuck. It's like branded to the front of my brain. And she said, her therapist had said to her, your pleasure is your responsibility. And I think it's a really important thing to remember, because I think it is easy. And I have done this sometimes in my writing of being like, you know, no one asked me what I wanted. You know, we live in a patriarchal society in which we put primacy on male pleasure, blah, 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 blah. Those things are true. However, your pleasure is your responsibility. When you're having sex with someone, you need to be able to articulate to them how this, like, this is how I feel pleasure. This is what I like. I wrote this the other day. Sadly, we don't come with a little label or a manual of how to fuck me and make me come, which I kind of wish I could actually make a manual and then hand out.
You should make a manual.
Make a manual and then hand it to prospective lovers and be like, listen, before we go to bed, read up and come back to me. Make things much simpler.
They wouldn't read it.
They wouldn't fucking read it.
I'd be like,
here's how, I mean, I don't even make it to my bed, so let's be real. But we don't come with a manual. We don't come with, it's like, and you have, every body is different. And, you know, every sexual interaction is different. And what you like one day is going to be very different from what you like the next day. So I think it is so critical to communicate to a sexual partner in that moment, on that day, what you like, what you want right there and then, what feels good and what doesn't. And that's the only way I think you're going to be able to orgasm.
Nice. That's also why I think so many women don't like men going down on them, is because they can't get out of their own heads to like focus on the pleasure.
I have thought myself out of an orgasm times where I've been like, don't lose it. Oh my God, you're thinking about it. Relax. And I'm like, it's taking too long. They're getting tired. It's taking too long. I feel bad.
It's too.
And then I'm like, fake it. And I'm like, don't fake it. You're a feminist. Don't fake it. I'm like, oh my God, I hate myself. For the love of God.
How many times have you been given head and I've had like, my mouth can't like move at the end of it, but you just do it because like, you know, you want to give someone else pleasure and like, you know, give a blowjob and you're like, you're in it for the long run until they orgasm. I had someone the day go down me for the first time in, we've been sleeping together for almost a year.
That's illegal.
He went down me for the first time. No, sorry, it wasn't the first time, but it was like very, very, there haven't been very many occasions. And it was the first like time we like properly like went for it. And honestly, after like a few minutes, like, you know, it takes you a bit of time to like, as you say, to get out of your head, to relax. And there's so many things, you know, you get worried, like, do I have hair down there? Does it look nice? Does it smell nice? All these worries and anxieties that are so like, you know, inculcated from, again, like broader kind of social pressures and expectations.
That they have never thought about in their lives.
They have never thought about. Oh my gosh. Every ex-boyfriend I had has like put his like dick on the table, like naked all the time, like waving it
holding it all the time.
With
their fucking filthy hands.
Slamming around like, it's like a kind of trophy. It's literally like if you won an award, you'd be like, listen, like that's how men, like, I think, treat their penises. Because in society, we do, that's how we treat penises. Whereas, like, the wonderful clitoris does not get that same level of, like, you know, praise and, you know, adulation. But he then, after like a minute or 2 minutes, so just as I'd kind of begun to relax, if that, said he had lockjaw.
No. Oh my God.
Lockjaw. I'll tell you what, I'll give you a lockjaw.
Somebody. Oh my God.
So, yeah, it takes. And it's so annoying because, like, in that moment, I was like, I am done sex therapy, so I'm not going to internalize this. But fuck you, because that is just the kind of thing that reinforces the shame and embarrassment around, like, oh, it's been too long. They feel uncomfortable. Like, as if you had lockjaw. That's like, that's the biggest lie I've ever heard.
And so it insinuates that, like, what's implicit in that is it's taken longer than other times. And then, yeah, and if you were younger, you would totally internalize that, and that could affect it.
Totally.
Literally the rest of your life.
It had honestly been about a minute, 2 minutes, maybe 2 minutes. I was like, no one... Can't, well, sometimes you do. You come on your own in like a minute, not with someone else. So
that's another thing I can't remember. That it was probably in sex loving group, where someone was like, all these women were saying, I just don't like sex. And then they would say, okay, so how do you have sex? And they'd be like, well, he kind of just does like it. Gives me a nudge. And then I'm like, oh, and it's never foreplay. It's never. And they're like, no, you just don't like having sex the way a man has sex. Because men, once they're erect hard, they're ready to go, but you're not ready to go. You need to be like whatever, warmed
up. What is it? Who's sure that was when I went to that I went to a sex workshop for 2 days when I was like trying to figure out what was wrong with me with my last relationship. And she was like, you need to be kept women need to be kept simmering, like, and what happens is you don't. There's no, because men are just like sex or not a lot of the time.
Kind of on or off. Yeah,
they're not wanting to just like passionately kiss randomly or like tap you on the ass or like keep you feeling sexual so that when you go to have sex, you're like so cold that you're just like, this is going to take me so long to feel in a sexual mood that I feel like I just don't like sex. I have so many friends who just think they just don't like sex.
That's because so true. Of that. And in that thing, it was saying, a woman was saying, I really like being like massaged. They were like, okay, give her like a massage first. Give her like something that eases her into it.
Oh, just like where touch
you're
you
in and- the, yeah, you're in like a pleasurable zone and then you feel like you want to, as opposed to feeling like it's a chore to tick off your list.
Which is why sex turns on so many women when it's at the start of a relationship and when it's getting to know them, because we like all of that cheesy, cute stuff of like the touching on the arm and like feeling like your legs are grazing each other and all of that turns us on. Exactly. And men are like,
that's so true.
My dick.
I'm like, yeah, men get like, turned on by like that candle. That's an empty hole. But
we said this before, it's like context, like sex, I think for, you know, I think particularly for women is about like, as you say, all the things that happen outside of the bedroom. So I know for me, like I need to like, to feel emotionally safe and which then allows me to like, get out of my head and into the moment. It's the things leading up to actually having sex that are so important. So it's, as you say, like it's holding my hand when we go somewhere and like putting your arm around me. Like those are things that in the day they build up my head. I'm like, okay, I feel like really safe with this person. And then when we have sex, I'm like, oh, great.
Yeah.
I'm like, but without those things, like it's, and actually I wanted to say, as you said that kind of, you really alluded to like the dutiful nature of sex that some people feel. Mm. And a friend of mine, Billy Quinlan, runs a brilliant sex app called Furly. And she does workshops and coaching with women, so coaching them through a program to help them overcome sexual trauma or any sexual issues they may have. And she said the most common thing that comes up amongst the women that she works with as their blocker to having more pleasurable sex is feeling that sex is dutiful. So it's my duty as a wife, a partner, a girlfriend, whatever, to have sex. And that, I mean, just sit with that for a second. duty, this idea that we owe somebody sex. That's a really toxic, terrible narrative that of course you're not going to enjoy something if you feel you're duty bound to do it, to perform. And again, what does that speak of? That speaks the primacy being placed male pleasure. Sex is something that happens on a man's terms. And so a lot of the coaching that she does is really trying to like unwire those more problematic narratives and really allowing people to see, okay, if sex wasn't dutiful, like, what would you like? What would make you feel good? And as you said, it's not often, it's not just like, they're just like, fuck me. It's like, you know, we have too narrow a version of like what sex is. There's Dr. Karen Gurney, another sex therapist who's utterly brilliant, talks about this, like how we really need to like open up like what we see as sex. Because this idea that sex is penis and vagina is so narrow and is so reductive and excludes so many types of sex. So if you're, you know, lesbian, if you sleep just with women, have you never had sex because you haven't had something, a penis and like inside you? No, of course not. That's insane. So I think it's really about re-understanding like what sex is and yeah, and all the kind of forms it can take. I think she describes it as being like a buffet and you need to be able to feel like you can just pick and choose anything. And you know, I love a buffet, so
same. Buffet breakfast,
it's my favorite. Me too. That I eat with my eyes and I eat so much of them, feel so sick for the rest of the day. But same. Yeah.
Okay, final question. Yes. So we've had you here for ages, although I could talk about this forever. So there have been a lot of articles alleging we're in a sex recession recently. Apparently those between the ages of 18 and 23 are having 14% less casual sex than young adults were 10 years ago. What do you make of this? Like, do you think that's real? Do you think, I don't know, why would we be in a sex recession?
Purely anecdotally, I read the piece, I think you flagged a piece by Annie Lord, which was great, which discussed this idea, like the impact that dating apps have had on people's relationship to sex. And it really resonated. And again, this is anecdotal, not like scientific, but I think dating apps have created for single people this idea of like infinite optionality. So you feel like you just have this never ending like conveyor belt of potential people that you could date. And I think it just makes people really flaky and kind of shit. And I think that that invariably has an impact therefore on like how we have sex. I don't know, it just feels like people are way, yeah, just kind of like flaky, like nothing really like amounts. So Annie Lord talks about how kind of loads of relationships kind of live and die on in text and it never kind of amounts to anything. You don't even sleep with someone. And that's definitely been my experience as well. Because I think, especially I think during the pandemic when you were so reliant on apps, it became like as your only way of meeting people. And so often that didn't amount to anything. You couldn't actually meet up with someone. And so I think that kind of has like reframed, yeah, our like dating culture a bit and made it quite like transient and like a bit flaky and crap. And in terms of like whether it's like that a sexual recession, god, it sounds so depressing, but I guess I'm definitely having a bit of a sexual recession. I mean, I've definitely experienced that. And I was interviewing this brilliant sex educator, Scotty Unfamous, the other day, who does a lot of, she goes into schools and talks to young people, and she said there's a big difference with between millennials and Gen Z, whereby millennials are typically having a bit more sex but are a bit more kind of are less open. Gen Z are really open about being like pansexual, bisexual, trans, gender fluid, but are like way less intimate and are having less sex and like less relationships. They're less like kind of more, I don't say commitment phobic because that sounds judgmental, but aren't, yeah, are kind of having less like intimate relationships.
They're probably also less like us when we were, oh my god, stop. the fly is hunting. They're probably less like we were when we were young, like as we were just saying in the early stages of this conversation, feeling as though we had to have sex because it was some social, added some social value to our teens. And we felt like that was something that was expected of us. And they're probably, maybe there's a sex recession because they're all like, we actually don't want to have sex with you guys. Yeah.
Well, there's also a lot of people are going celibate. I'm interviewing a lot of people and reading about it, just lots of people being celibate. And I think, yeah, I wonder if it's that a kind of reaction to previous like pressures, like you need to like have your I hate the term, but like your body count needs to be high. That sounds like a kind of pile of people you've shot, but you want to have, there's a kind of, it's a marker of something positive to accept with lots of people. Exactly. And there's pressure to have had lots of experiences. And perhaps there is this kind of pushback on that, being like, actually, no, I'm like not ready and I don't want to. And I think that's amazing if that is coming from that place, like of people feeling there's less shame associated with not having had sex or not having had sex with as many people. But I mean, I'd like to have lots more sex. I think maybe, I think that, so I think that was kind of very kind of circuitous way of saying that I do think apps primarily. But then you can also argue that now more than ever, we can be more, the apps have also facilitated like lots of like, you can kind of tailor what you want. So like Field is an example where people can now, if you want a threesome, if you want to try bondage, if you want to try BDSM, it really caters to people who want to explore lots of different types of sex. And that's like never really existed before. Like that was created in 2014 because there was no other app that specifically kind of catered to threesomes, and obviously has blossomed and is like the app that people use if they want to try BDSM for the first time, they want to go to a sex club. And so stuff like that, technology has in a way, you know, that's a new opportunity to be, to explore sex and your sexuality in lots of different exciting ways. As I say this, I'm like, God, I need to get on the field. But I guess it's a kind of double-edged sword, isn't it?
I have friends going to sex parties in London.
Yeah, a lot.
A friend went to a sex party completely dressed in all of this crazy bondage and had a threesome.
Really? That's the thing. So I think the sex recession, I do think, yes, dating I think has become more transient. It's become less committed. It's become crap. But actually from a sex perspective, I feel like it's also become less taboo. Like a sex party, I feel like previously, a couple years ago, I think I would have been a bit like, well, sex party, like, oh. But now I've been really like, I'm crossbreeds as an example. I'm hearing loads of people, loads of friends who I would never have imagined would go to a sex party.
Same.
It's a kind of new, it's just kind of sexual exploration. So I do think maybe people are having, statistically are having less sex, but I do think the opportunities for exploration are bigger and better.
The older horny millennials are going to sex parties. Like fuck Gen Z's. Abstaining.
Like, not for us. We're celibate. We're like, get me to a party.
That's funny. I want to investigate that more. I need to get to the root of that.
Me too. I'm going to go to a sex party, actually.
Let's all go to a sex party for our next meetup.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Date number two takes place at a sex party dressed in nothing.
We'll bring the mics.
So what's your experience been in sex party so far? Well, I have had sex with three people.
Oh, investigative journalism.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, I love that.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you. What a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, thank you. This has been so lovely. And as I say, it's such a joy doing this in real life. I feel like we're now back in the glory days now of IRL podcasting. So thank you for having me. You do the best.
I know. We forget that.
When is your next sex talks?
Next sex talks is going to be, actually there's one on July 13th, which is at Soho House. Get you both there. On how to overcome sexual shame. And then the one on this July 14th at the Edition Hotel. So I do it once a month at the Edition Hotel. And that is going to be announced on Monday next week. And tickets will go live. So you should come.
I feel like you're away but we'll definitely come to like.
Yes, when we're here. 100%.
That'd be so fun.
I've got, from September when we get back to school months, it will be really kind of picking up again. So
amazing.
See you there.
Yay!
Thank you.
And bye to the listeners.
Oh yeah.
Bye.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.